Welcome back to the Leafs Cast, a special Allison's Only episode. Tim, I know you look forward to this episode the entire year. Tell me how you're feeling.
Oh, man. Two people? Here's the problem, though. As much as listening to Steven sometimes make me want to pull my hair out, I now have to listen to you that much more.
Well, I usually have to correct both of you when you're wrong, but at least now it's going to be a little more manageable handling only you from here on out of this podcast.
That's funny that you think that.
Well, Tim, we find ourselves once again at the end of the season. I think we just played game 73 or 74. We just finished our last game against Florida, which we won. I'm sure that we had no doubts the entire game that the Leafs were going to pull that one off, right?
Yeah, most important game of the season, called it. Yeah, we have 8 games left now, but classically showed up real nice for 2 periods, get our hopes up real high, and then make sure that we take nothing for granted.
So, Tim, this team, mid-game, which we literally just saw in our last game against Florida, but for this season as a whole, it feels like it's been escalated, you know, dial to 10 of you have one Leaf team show up one night and another Leaf team show up another night, and one Leaf team show up for the first half of the season and another Leaf team show up the second half of the season. And we went like 30 or 40 games with Domi sucking and Samsonov sucking and Bertuzzi sucking, and like you could go down the list. We've talked about it on many of our pods this season, and then somewhere along the line the switch is flicked, and top to bottom, this past month or 2 months or even 3 months, we've looked like a pretty good hockey team. So I'm wondering kind of where you're at. We're near the end of the season. This will probably be our last pod before we do our playoff preview. So I want to ask you, where are you at with this Leafs team? Are you like fully on the bandwagon, or is your hope there? Or we've been pretty skeptical at some parts of the season. So where are you at?
Are you asking me if I believe, Ryan? If I believe?
It's the age old question.
I feel like every time I see them, I get more and more hopeful, saying, you know what, this team could make some noise. And especially when I see like Florida lose a couple games, these top teams go on these losing streaks, I say, you know, it's wide open. They don't have these powerhouse teams like some years where it seems like every team is like a President's Trophy winner if they're in any other year. But then it turns, and it's like we have no defense, we have no goalie, we have no power play, we have no goal. We're just like, oh, if Austin Matthews doesn't score, we lose. And it's like, so I feel very fickle.
Well, that's good, because the team we cheer for is rather fickle. So
yes, and so I go, overall, I think I'm in a much better place than we were a couple months ago. I think, certainly the start of the season, we were like ride or die by the core four, and now we're still pretty ride or die by the core four, but this past, how long has Marner been out now? A few weeks?
It feels like it's been a month. It just keeps dragging on.
It's felt like a while. The special teams have missed him the most and have not recovered in the slightest.
Well, let's talk about the special teams for a second there, because it's really a tale of two. I mean, special teams are only two sides. There's penalty kill and power play. But our penalty kill, which has been brutal all year long, like bottom of the league, bottom five in the league, which is crazy for a team that's as successful as we are in terms of points and winning. Our penalty kill recently, really since even Martin Yarker have been out, has actually been okay. Like, I think we're on like a 10 or 11 straight that we've killed off, and it's kind of turned a quarter here. Do you think that's just too small of a sample size and it's going to come back down to earth, or is this our guys finally figuring it out here?
I thought I saw a stat, maybe this is before last game, but that like since Marner was injured, the Leafs were like 25th or 30th in the league in both power play and penalty kill.
I know our power play has been brutal. That was what I was going to talk about next. That might have been skewing your stat a little bit. I think we're last place in the league on the power play since like the All-Star break.
What's interesting about the penalty kill is it feels like we have like our bottom six guys. They say, "Oh wait, your job isn't to score. That's Matthew's job. Your job is to penalty kill." Like, all these guys that come and say, oh, Edmonton, he's a good penalty killer. Dewar, oh, he's a good penalty killer. Mm-hmm. It's like, these guys have one job.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess Edmonton's not in the lineup right now. He's missed a couple games.
Yeah.
I don't know. It feels like... I wouldn't say I'm the most confident about our penalty killing. If anything, I think, you know, Steven said it before. I think it was back when Campbell first took over for us in net, that your goalie is your most important penalty killer. Mm. And for the first half of the season, we had very below average goaltending. Like, it's saying something when Martin Jones is our best goalie for a large period of time this season, at least healthy goalie anyway. And now, you know, we're going to talk about it a bit, but Samsonov's been looking much, much more solid back there, and he's making some big saves on the penalty kill. And if you get hemmed in and you're giving up quality chances, but your goalie makes all the saves, and you tend to forget about the penalty kill a little bit, and you say, oh, I guess we killed off another one. It just goes on the win column in the stat sheet. I don't know. I would say that I'm not the most confident in our penalty kill, but I am glad that at least we're getting the results here much more than we were earlier in the season anyway.
Yeah, it does look like they're maybe starting to turn the corner, but maybe I'm just still haunted by those 2018-19 playoff series against Boston where their power play was just like automatic goal. Please just like hoping they score early to give us a chance to make it up later. Like, those years were horrendous. And so, like, I just think, like, Boston not quite, like, obviously still have Pastrnak, one of the best power play goal scorers in the league, but not, I would say, quite at the same levels. Well, I don't know.
As Verhaeghe, or Reinhart, the actual best goal scorer in the league this year on the power play, I think he's leading the league in that. I don't know. I was listening to Craig Button talk about how it's okay if your power play, specifically talking about the playoffs, that it's okay if your power play isn't going in the playoffs, because it's like, all right, we didn't get a goal, but that's okay. We'll get one in 5-on-5 or whatever. Like, we have lots of time in the game to get a goal. But if your penalty kill's not going, then that's like you're sunk, because now you're just giving up goals, you're playing from behind, and you can't catch up. But I was listening to that rationale, and I honestly just think it's wrong. Like, it would be correct if this was like a game played against three or four opponents, but it's just you and one other person here. So if your penalty kill isn't going, that means that their power play is going. Or if your power play's not going, that means their penalty kill is not going. So it balances out with each other. And if we have a poor penalty kill, then obviously that's very bad, because it means that we're giving up goals. But if we also have a bad power play, then that means the other team has a great penalty kill, and our power play has been brutal. It's been so bad. I think that they mentioned in the last broadcast we're like 3 for our last 40, or it was the most ridiculous number.
The only reason why they don't have like the stats that they can show us is for how bad our power play is because of those couple years ago where the power play was even worse, where we didn't score like 50 games in a row. No, not 50, you know, opportunities in a row, but.
But year as well, it took us right to the end of the season. I remember we were talking about it before we went to playoffs. So like, I think we got like one or two goals at the end of the season. But
I remember the one goal they got. It was like they won the Stanley Cup after getting that goal.
That's great. Right.
You scored having more guys on the ice than the other team.
Yeah.
But I mean, it comes back to like, is it a mental fortitude issue of like these guys? Like, it gets in their heads, they can't do it, and they start second guessing themselves, and so I don't know if that's an element to it, but
well, how much of this do you just put down to Mitch Marner is out, and even the last like as recent as 2 or 3 games, Morgan Riley's been out, and those are like two, mm-hmm. like really the two main passing the quarterback, if you will, of the power play that aren't there. Although Riley's played for a lot of this slump, and even before he went out, like we weren't doing too well in the power play for when Marner got out there. But do you think that we don't worry about it? They're saying that Marner's going to be back possibly on Wednesday, but more likely on the weekend, and we'll still have 5 or 6 games to kind of get things back on track? Or like, where are you at for panic button here?
I'm not losing sleep over it. One thing that I forgot what article, I think it was on The Athletic, I read the thing about having Timothy Liljegren on that power play is being a right shot. He can't set up Austin Matthews in the same way because Austin Matthews sits on the right. So it's like the passing is on, like Morgan Riley's obviously a left defenseman. So it just, it's a significant change that where the puck is cycling and taking out that Matthew, obviously Matthew's best goal scorer in the league, unbiased opinion. But so Mitch Marner is someone who I think doesn't quite get enough credit, but I also have no sympathy for him at all because he demanded that when he demanded all his money, so he gets equal the amount of credit he deserves. Anyways, I'm not losing sleep over it yet. I just want to see Marner back. I'll feel a lot better once Marner's back and he's healthy. Like, some of these guys, they come back. Did they have they even said what he was out with? Or just like...
Marner? It was his foot. He like, it was in that Boston game. He did that weird spinorama shot and he had a lower body injury.
Lower body. Anyways, I just want to see, like, if Marner can step in and be Mitch Marner again, I'll be breathing a lot easier. Like, I don't want to, like, my fear, I guess he has a week.
If he it's comes not back a lot of time. Saturday, yeah.
I guess he has a week and a half. A little bit of time.
But he has to get, like, back up, not just to regular season form, but, like, amp up to playoff form real soon here. Like, it's crazy how fast the end of the season is coming here. It's interesting that, like, in their absence, we've seen guys like Bertuzzi or Domi step into that top line role. And whereas those two guys both have found a lot of success in this back half of the season at 5-on-5. But slotting those guys in on the power play, you'd think that, like, we've seen Domi able to set up Matthews real easy. Like, that connection just feels like it's there naturally, but it's not really clicking on the power play. So it's just the weirdest thing. We're so top heavy loaded. We have the most elite offensive players and they can't score on the power play.
It's all mental. That's why at the back of my mind, I don't see these guys going that far in the playoffs. They just don't have that, I don't know, mental fortitude of, like, saying, like, once the monkey gets on your back, they can't shake it. Okay. You also didn't answer the question from the beginning. Do you believe, Ryan? Do you believe?
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's go through the rest of what we're talking here today. Because sometimes you just got to talk it out. You got to say your feelings, and then I'll let you know whether I believe at the end here.
Stay tuned, listeners. The whole pod, you have to wait.
Well, I know that's what the world wants to know about. Let's talk about Bertuzzi and Domi a little bit more, because they have found a new home. I mean, I guess before Marner went down, we saw a brief look of the line of Bertuzzi, Matthews, Marner, which we saw at the beginning of the season. It was very not good. Marner didn't look great. Matthews was scoring, but that's just because he was in another level. And Bertuzzi looked completely lost. And he lost that line spot for probably something like 40 or 50 games before he's now reunited with Matthews. And it just looks like a totally different combination. And Marner obviously comes out injured. Domi steps in. And it just looks like a perfect fit. That line of Bertuzzi, Matthews, Domi is dominating in the offensive zone. Domi's setting Matthews up all day. He's at 62 goals now. I'm sure we'll talk about that in a little bit. What are your impressions of the Domi, Bertuzzi, Matthews line? And do you think that there's any chance when Marner's healthy that he doesn't get his line spot back?
Well, what's crazy about Domi is I feel like we've been kind of down on him for most of the season, because, like, you look at his goal total and, like, not quite there, and but then you look at some of the stats and he's, like, one of the league leaders when it comes to 5-on-5 assists. I guess no power play assists, but, you know, he doesn't get them as much power play time, so we'll let him off the hook. But yeah, like, one of the premier setup men in the league. I mean, especially when you look at, like, who he's been playing most of the year with, it, like, it's actually remarkable for that guy. Now, I mean, he makes $3 million, and it's interesting if you look ahead and see, like, is he going to be re-signed and what's he actually worth? That'll be an off-season pod, which hopefully is a long ways away from today.
That's right.
That's been something that I think we haven't necessarily seen before, of, like, Matthews meshing with anyone you stick him with. Like, I know you talk about the greats like Sidney Crosby or some of those other players, like, you stick him with two fourth liners and instantly that they make he elevates his line mates to be elite, and that line just like works. And Matthews is like, well, does he need Marner? He's pretty well in his time at the Leafs. He always either had like Marner or Nylander. He's always been surrounded by elite talent. Do I see this sticking? I don't. This is where maybe we're missing Steven on this podcast. Steven believes in Domi and Bertuzzi and wants to see the depth guys spread out, just because it's been working. And I think the depth scoring is something that the Leafs obviously haven't seen in the past few years. They load up on a line, the line gets shut down, and then we're out. But I think it's great that Matthews is still scoring with Domi Bertuzzi, and that Domi Bertuzzi seem to have figured it out. But I think like when you have a talent like Mitch Marner, you just need him in that as many minutes as you can get. 5-on-5, penalty kill, everything. And so in this case, I think when Marner comes back, he just slips right back onto Matthews' wing, and then hopefully Domi's learned a thing or two when it comes to being an elite setup man.
Yeah, it's... I could see, like, at the end of a game, we need a goal, and we're starting to double shift Matthews and play the big four a lot, that, like, he gets out there with a ship with those guys. And honestly, it's really nice to know that we have this as a combination that, at least in the offensive zone, it's clicking. Because it looks great. Like, when those guys are on the ice, I'm expecting a goal, if not some quality scoring chances, to come out of what they're putting together.
It looks like on paper they complement themselves well. Like Bertuzzi is like a little more
vinegar was the
something like that. Matthews is goal scorer. Domi is your setup guy, and it's like the in EA Sports those guys that have high chemistry. Steven School is about the chem. It's all about the chem.
It is all about the chem. But at the same time, you're going to be facing, you know, Florida's got Mr. 52 goals over there, and Boston has Pasternak, dangerous as ever, and we're going to need one of our lines to go out there and defend against these guys. Like, those are high octane players we're playing against, no matter who is our first round opponent. Domi as much as anybody. He's looked great the second half of the season. He definitely has his way to move the puck around the offensive zone. But similar to guys like Nick Robertson or some other guys you've seen in the past in playoffs, I have no faith that when the game's on the line, Domi's not going to make a bad pass and put it right on the stick of Pasternak or whoever, and go down and score the game breaker goal in overtime or whatever. Tim, you could pick out at least 5 or 6 Leaf players and say it's a that. Like, it's a Travis Dermott. We've seen it from him too. Like, there, it's happened too many times. So I can't imagine a world where Keefe doesn't say, I want Matthews and Marner and X out there against the other team's best line. It's just what's going to happen here.
Yep, I think so. Like, especially when, like, John Tavares, he's been having a pretty good season. Obviously, William Nylander has been, like, on another level this year, but not necessarily another level defensively. Like, that's not a line that I would trust against the elite. Like, certainly it's a line that can hold its own, and, I mean, looking at Boston's number two line, I think that line has an edge, but it's not one that you can put out there and not have to worry about it, right? So
yeah. Okay, let's shift gears here a little bit and talk about another line of the Leafs who's looked pretty good. Much smaller sample size. I think it's only been a couple games, but our new look third line, centered by Pontus Holmberg, on flanked by Matthew Nyes and Nick Robertson, has actually looked pretty good out there. And you look at them and say, "Oh man, this line's got some chem. It's clicking out there, and they're not making the, you know, it's a line of rookies. They got a few goals against Florida. They let a few goals in against Florida, a little bit of both. But the unfortunate thing, I mean, really, it's a good problem to have. But the Leafs have a couple forwards coming back. You know, before playoffs, we're expecting Mitch Marner to be there. We're expecting Yarncrook to be there. And those guys are definite roster players. Like, there's no chance either of them are going to be sitting, which means two guys from our Leaf lineup are going to be bumped here. And you could look at guys like Ryan Reeves, but I'm fairly sure he's going to be in our playoff roster. Like, I think we got that guy specifically for the playoffs. So I'm not even going to acknowledge that Ryan Reeves might not play, at least for game one. We'll see as that series unfolds. You have Connor DeWar. He just got his first goal with us, but he's a new acquisition. I don't really expect us to be saying no to him. So then you have, like, Holmberg, Robertson, probably not Nyes, probably not McMahon. Like, who are the two guys that you're taking out to put Yarncrook and Marner back in?
I forget. This is with Gregor's already out, right?
Gregor's like already out.
He's already out. I can't take the low-hanging fruit.
Nope. The low-hanging fruit is guys like Holmberg, Robertson, DeWar, and Reeves. Those probably are the most likely four.
The thing about Holmberg is he plays center, which is invaluable. Like, I know DeWar and Camp or DeWar, like, they both play center as well, so maybe we don't necessarily need him as well, but like Keith loves having his flexibility at center and being able to flip the guys around depending on what side the face-off's on, and Holmberg is more responsible, and so like I'm leaning towards Holmberg. It's been fun to see like Nick Robertson actually start to round into form, and it's like Leafs cast have been long time Nicky Robb believers, and I do think that like if the Leafs come out flat in the playoffs, then no one to happen. Actually, I think the last couple years we've come out pretty well in game one. Anyways,
we were not good in game one against Florida. We lost that game quite thoroughly
on the game six hangover.
Yes,
but I think maybe if we need some more firepower, Nicky Robb comes in. But it has been kind of fun seeing the little competition. Like all those bubble guys, I feel in the last five games have all kind of stepped it up. It's, they've been competing. It is exactly what you want to see. If it were up to me right now, I think Pontus Holmberg slots in ahead of Nick Robertson for game one. But and then I think Reeves is also in the lineup. Mm-hmm. They love setting the tone that first game, whether it's. We'll see if Ryan Reeves.
Don't mention Kyle Clifford to me, Tim. Don't bring that up.
Go get suspended. Is Kyle Clifford on the list of guys that could slot in?
He's with the Marlies, I think. Yeah, it is. You know what? It is a tough one. Because like the other X factor to it all is that we could see Domi moving back to a center position, right? Like you were saying, Holmberg plays center, which is so valuable. But Domi's probably, like we both agree, he's probably going to lose his spot as a winger on the top line. So either he's going to be the second line winger, which he could be. Like right now, Bobby McMahon is playing there, which is probably higher in the lineup than he should be playing. So he could just move back there. Or you could see Domi moving into the third line center spot. Where it gets interesting is what kind of lines are you wanting to have here? Because right now, that third line of Holmberg, Nyes, and Robertson, they're not your shutdown defensive line. You know, like there are a lot of rookies out there who are going to be able to go out and score some goals and create some offense, but they're probably not the guys you want out when you're trying to defend a lead. Keefe tried that against Florida, and he actually talked post game about that decision, and he said that he was actually going into the game wanting to give that line some tough minutes and put them in a difficult situation, kind of to see how they'd handle it and to give them a taste for it, because those players are probably, whether you try to or not, especially in these road games, are going to be in those situations in the playoffs. And unfortunately for them, they let a couple of goals in that third period against Florida, so it didn't go so well. But that's just Leafs as a whole kind of crumbling.
And what's interesting about the whole lines and like what is their role, it's like you can say like, well, as an NHLer, Calle Järnkrok is better than Nick Robertson. But you take that line of Holmberg, Matthew Nyes, and then the right winger spot, and it's like you put Järnkrok in there instead of Robertson, and all of a sudden that line is like, oh, is it that good of an offensive line, or is it? Yeah. It feels more of a hodgepodge of like kind of defense, or maybe it's like, oh well, they're kind of that. Maybe does Järnkrok balance the line, and now it works better, or is it just like
I think it's become abundantly clear that Domi, you're going to get the best out of Domi if he's playing with someone who could score. Like, that guy's a playmaker. I think that we at the beginning of the season, we were under the false notion that he's going to come in and generate offense, and he does, but not as a goal scorer. He sets people up. He's like a Mitch Marner light, minus the entirety of defensive Mitch Marner. So we need, like, right now we're seeing the fruit from that when he's playing with Austin Matthews. We can't put him on a line with, like, Holmberg.
Bobby McMahon.
He needs Bobby McMahon. He needs Nick Robertson. Like, he needs someone who's able to get into position and rip it. So if he comes in and Domi centers a third line with Yarncrook on the wing, that's okay. But that other winger, it needs to be a goal scorer. It needs to be someone who could score. Because there's no point in having a Domi-centered line, which is going to be, like, taking defensive zone draws. Like, no way. And you can't have a Domi-centered line that's where he's setting up people with stone hands out there. Not that Yarncrook is that, but he's definitely not a bona fide goal scorer out there. So I think it's the same problem that we've had for a lot of the season, that it feels like we have an abundance of some pieces or we're missing other pieces, which makes it difficult to create lines that work well together. Even like Ryan Reeves on that third line, like Reeves and Camp on a line together. What the heck kind of line is that? But it's kind of found its own, like, Reeves has played pretty well the last little bit here. So hopefully he can keep it up.
Yeah, we'll see. It will be interesting times. Well, I think it also depends on who we're playing for how necessary is it that Reeves is in the lineup for, like, we play Carolina. There's some situation where it happened. Not looking likely, but, like, does Carolina have any tough guys?
It's almost for sure we're going to be playing Florida or Boston. Like, that's so close to being a solid. The only way we're playing, well, we need to get into it. But I think Reeves will be in there. Yeah. All right, should we talk about the defense for a little bit?
Or the Leafs cast. We love talking about defense.
Always last, though. We talk about, they're the afterthought.
Always the afterthought.
No, because it's really the same problem that we're going to have on defense where Morgan Riley's coming in and he's got to bump someone out here. So you got, like, the for sure D guys who are going to be playing on our team are Riley, Brody, McCabe, Liljegren, Lyubushkin, probably as a five. Those guys are going to be in. And that leaves one spot left for, no, in Edmonton. Is that just it? What about Benoit? What about Giordano? Are those guys even, like, considerations for you?
I mean, we saw Brody be a healthy scratch earlier, but I think I would write him in. He has too much history, even though, like, this year has been a little rough for him. He's had some off-ice stuff going on as well, but I don't know if Edmonton is, like, an automatic in over Giordano and Benoit and Timmins. That, I think those are the other three. Man, we have a lot of defense on
Timmins
the roster.
Is definitely the lowest of
he's
that
the
pile,
lowest
think,
yeah. Unfortunately, like, the injuries of this year, he just never quite got the groove, and so maybe certainly as injuries pile up, like, he is an option, like, he's on the radar, but nothing he's done that kind of suggests that he fills a need more than the other guys.
Mm-hmm.
I think same way that Reeves is in game one of the playoffs, I think Edmondson is in game one of the playoffs. Just helps set the tone. He's a big body. We know Brad Treliving loves that. But, I mean, we make the joke and say, like, oh, Treliving looks only the height and weight of these guys when he does make trades. But there is something to be said for not being pushed around and for setting the stage.
Well, Brad Treliving just, I mean, we have to talk about it because we haven't potted about it yet, but he signed Benoit. He just gave the guy a shiny extension, 3 years at $1.3 million, $1.35 or something.
Yeah. Benoit, Reeves, and Bobby McMahon all providing the same value to the team.
Yeah. So what do you think about that extension for Benoit?
I like it. Benoit is 25, so he has some room to grow. I think he serves a bit of a hole in our defense as far as being that physical presence that Morgan Riley doesn't necessarily bring. But it's also, like, we have a fair number of defense in that are UFA next year. Like, Brody could be gone. Edmondson, Giordano, Lyubushkin, all UFAs. Liljegren is an RFA. It'll be interesting to see what he makes next mm-hmm. year. But and then you just basically have Timmins. So, like, you're going to need someone on defense. And this unrestricted free agent crop of players is not, I don't know if the solution is going to be found there. So I kind of like it. Well, I don't like it if Benoit is going to be like, well, I was going to say in a number four defenseman, but it's like, might be a number four defenseman for us next year.
It's pretty low risk when you sign a guy to 1.3 million. Like, it's yeah. not a lot of downside to that contract. I thought that was a little strange. Like, 3 years seemed like a long time. Like, what has he done to deserve a 3-year contract at this point? Right now, like, we just listed off the guys. I don't think he's going to be in our playoff roster. So why are we committing to this guy for 3 years at anything above league minimum here? But I think the number one thing that makes me okay with it is exactly what you said. We literally don't have any defensemen coming back next year. And he's proven that he can play at an NHL level. So I think it's fine. It felt higher money and longer term than I think needed to be done, but that's just pretty par for the course for Bradtree living now. So
yeah, I mean, it's also hard to evaluate defensemen like him, right? Like, he has 1 goal, 5 points. So it's like, but that's not what you're paying
him. That's better than Brody.
I
actually disagree with you a lot on Edmondson, Tim. Coming out of the trade deadline, I wasn't too impressed with the players we brought in. I thought that none of them were needle movers and just what it was. Joel Edmondson's a needle mover. You notice him when he's out there. Guy's massive. He is a full head taller than anyone else in our D-core here. And he is mean. Like, he clears the net. He hits hard on the boards. I think that we're going to see his best hockey is yet to come. He's going to be even better in the playoffs when everything is bigger and harder and heavier. And that's when having a guy like Joel Edmondson is going to be great. Now, I hope he doesn't do anything stupid and dirty and that I have to curse his name. And I hope he just, like, clean cross checks to the neck. But I've been really impressed with Edmondson so far. And I actually think I want him in the lineup. I think I would prioritize getting that guy in playoff ready.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind him. Like, certainly I do like what he brings to the team. And, like, I think the guys he's pushing out, like, I'm a big, like, Mark Giordano fan. Guy is 40, so, like, and I remember last year, like, really started being a liability at the end of the season, so I am glad that we don't have to rely on him to carry the team, but I think we'll see Mark Giordano play some playoff games. Who comes out? Maybe it's an injury, maybe... I mean, if we play Boston or Florida, surely there's going to be some dirty hit that happens. It's inevitable.
Just waiting for the suplex.
I know. Ugh.
The one thing about Giordano is, he just came back and played a couple games since his injury, which, like, just to say off the top, I thought when he got that concussion that his career was over. Like, I just didn't think he was going to come back and play any more games for us. Even if he did come back, he wouldn't get in the lineup because he was too far down. So I thought that was his career ended by that hit. Really nice to see him actually come back, and he already played some games for us, and I kind of agreed to him. I think he will, and I think he will because we need his penalty killing. He's solid back there. You notice him. There's a reason why he's the all-time leader in block shots, because he gets out there and penalty kill and gets in the lane. He knows how to do it, and clearly he's better at it than anyone else because his shin pads look like they've been through a war. So I think he'll be in there because... we talked about it earlier, how important penalty kill and power play are. And if we can stuff the other team's power play, that's pretty good. We have good 5-on-5 scoring.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we'll see how the refs are feeling each game for if they want a no penalty kill, no penalty affair or a prey to the penalty box.
Oh, don't worry, Tim. I'm sure we'll have lots to talk about the refs come playoff times. We'll get into that. Don't you worry.
Yeah. We'll see. It is nice to have options, though. I guess it's partly because of the injuries we've had, but we have a loaded roster. We have so many guys, like multiple forward guys sitting in the press box, multiple defense that could come in and play meaningful minutes. I mean, all that being said, this is like a classic Leafs problem, right? Like, we've talked 20 minutes now about guys on the edges. Unlikely those guys are the difference makers this series. Like, I still think that comes down to Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner. Are they going to be the best players in the series? As well as, we haven't talked about goaltending yet, but I think I'm not sure if the Mark Giordano is going to be the winner or lose loss well, of the series, but hey.
But here's the thing, Tim, and I, like you say that, but I remember, well, I say I remember. Hopefully I have the memory correct. I didn't fact check before. I'm about to make myself look like a fool here, but I remember the first year that the Leafs played Tampa Bay in the playoffs and went all the way to game seven. Do you remember who scored two goals in game seven to wipe us out?
It's probably Corey Perry.
It wasn't Corey Perry. It wasn't Braden Point or Kucherov or... It was Paul. It was Nick Paul got two goals against us in the most important game. So you think, like, yes, we're probably going to win or lose series based on the performances of Matthews and Nylander and Marner. But, like, you're probably going to win one of the four games because of your other guys. And if we don't have any of those games with those other guys, then we're going to lose in seven because we only won three games. And we're very familiar with that road. So the depth guys do matter. And, like, having a defenseman like Edmondson who's going to, like, you know, really take a toll on Vraeger or Marchand or whoever, like, it adds up over a series. And it's – but then, like, it adds up on us too. Like, we're going to have injuries. There's no way we're going to get through this and not have it. We've had an injury every playoff run ever. it never stops. So, like, we're going to need these guys who are in our reserves, and it's going to be quite the run.
Yeah. Well, do you want to talk about goaltending?
It's the last position.
The last position.
Well, we have Joseph Woll, who has kind of been sputtering a little bit. It kind of all started with those two Boston games where it didn't go great, and Samsonov's kind of rounding in the form. Would you say you're prepared to call it that Samsonov is going to be our playoff goaltender, or is it still up in the air for you?
I think Samsonov's going to be certainly game one, likely game two as well. He's what, like 16 wins in 20 games since coming back from being waived, the Arizona Coyotes, who claimed Hatari Salari, or I don't even remember his name, like the most obscure claim.
Harry Sitari, I don't know.
Could have had a legit goaltender, Ilya Samsonov, expiring contract at $3.5 million. Holy passed on him.
Yeah.
And he comes back and he's a number one goaltender. It's a great story. One that we like haven't seen from the Leafs happen almost ever. It's like, it's crazy. You look back, year like Bob McMahon was waived, Benoit was waived. I don't know what was going on in those Dubas years, that maybe it was the general managers love pulling Dubas's strings and claiming all of our cast offs. But it's nice to at least be able to have like it work.
I still remember that the All or Nothing show. Who was it that got waived that Shanahan was like, really? Like, They picked him? Who is that? It was Mr. Vanilla. Old Vanilla. You know who I'm talking about.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. I went to the Rangers. Steven would tell us.
Steven would tell us his nationality and height and weight. Anyway, it is funny that these guys didn't get claimed, and now they look like they're all of them are going to be on our playoff roster this year. I think I'm with you that it's going to be Samsonov. I think barring an injury is probably the only thing that would make it not Samsonov at this point. He already had the tie with experience, and he already won a series for us. I smile every time the crowd goes, Sammy. It's just like, it's our guy. Like,
chant his name.
Yeah, it is a pretty fun story. In terms of my confidence level of our goaltending, it wavers. Like, Samsonov's looked really good. He looked really good in that Florida game, but he still let in four goals, and like in two of them he's like standing up doing the meerkat where like he doesn't even see the puck. So I don't know, it's
the meerkat. I haven't heard it called that before.
I think I stole that one from Steve Dangle. I don't know.
Jimmy VC is his name.
Jimmy VC, old Vanilla. Yeah, that's Vanilla. Shanahan's just like, really? Like, they picked him? I can just imagine off camera, but he sucks. No, I don't know. It makes me nervous that on the other side we're going to be facing either the reigning Vezina Trophy winner or Bobrovsky, who literally stole the series from us. Like, I mean, he did. We got outplayed as well. But, like, stood on his head and brought his team all the way to the Cup Final last year. And those are the two guys we're playing against. We're going to have the worst goalie again.
But we're going to have the best goal scorer, maybe. That's right.
No, that's mathematical certainty. He's at 62 goals right now. Do you think he gets to 70?
No, he can't. What was it? Eight goals?
8 goals in 8 games.
8 goals in 8 games. Crazier things have happened. I could see him getting 69, but not 70.
I mean, it is interesting. Like, a few milestones. McDavid had 64 last year, and you're sure that he wants to beat that. So 65 would be the number for that. But also, like, Ovechkin had 65 that 1 year, so I'm sure 66 is a number he's looking to get, just so he is, like, the all-time modern era, if that's what you want to call it. But I would put it past him, Tim. Like, we played Tampa Bay on Wednesday, and, like, the guy could just score a hat trick that game. Then all of a sudden, he's at 65 with 7 games to go, and we're ready. Like, I don't know.
He's the king of multi-goal games.
Yes, he really is. Hey, there's, I mentioned in our chat, but Ilya Samsonov is like the 16th fastest goalie in NHL history to reach 100 wins. What is that? Like, this guy was waived. And he, like, before coming to us, he played with Washington, and they said, no thanks. We don't even want this guy. Like, where is this track record that, I don't know, maybe he just didn't play a lot of games or something. I don't know. Very strange.
Yeah. I don't know, but how many goals? Well, 16th is pretty high. I like it. Tell me who's the fastest goalie to get to 100 playoff wins.
he's coming for it. He's on his way.
I don't know if any goalie has. Probably.
Oh, I'm sure goalies. I'm sure. Look that up here. All right, Tib. Last question of the day here. It's actually a really interesting end of the season. There's lots of playoff races that are coming down, not just with us, but like in the East in general. There's the Islanders, Detroit, Washington, and Philly are all battling for that last playoff spot and a half. I mean, it's kind of two playoff spots, but Metropolitan's kind of a joke in that third position there. It's like a third wild card spot. But there's three teams that are battling for that. There's like five teams that are trying to get the President's Trophy. I'm just scrolling here. I don't know, St. Louis is still on the cusp for that other wild card spot in the West. Like, LA is sputtering. Like, it's just really interesting stuff going on around the league. It's pretty exciting.
It is
nice
to have, like, an actual exciting end to the season. It feels like maybe this is just because in the past years the Leafs have been pretty locked in, but definitely more uncertainty with, like, I don't think any of the playoffs matchups are set. It's like, well, it could be anyone. Oh my goodness, Dallas won 7 in a row.
Yeah, they're crazy.
They're cooking. They're almost as hot as Ottawa.
But you're the pointless end of season, sir. It's like a tradition for Ottawa at this point. But no, you're right, Tim. Like, for the last number of years, Toronto has just been like, the last 10 games of the season don't even matter. We're like so locked in third place or so locked in second place that it's just like nothing to play for. And this year, you thought for a second that was going to be the case, but it's kind of rounded out where it's not. There was a while there where it looked like Tampa might have been able to catch them. I mean, they still could. They're 6 points back. We played the same amount of games, so it's unlikely, but it could still happen if we really sputter out here. Tampa's been pretty hot to end the season. But we're more looking ahead of us in Florida, who we just won, and we're now only 4 points back of them with 2 games in hand, and we play them again this year. So we could catch them. Now, it's almost for sure we're going to play either Boston or Florida, but we've seen it. Like, home ice advantage is important. That matters, especially that game 7, which we always seem to find ourselves in. But between Florida and Boston, we were caught at the end of last season with those fans in Maple Leaf Square. We want Florida, and look where that got us. So we got to be a little careful here. But if you're looking at the two of those teams, would you say that you're more optimistic or more apprehensive playing one of them over the other?
I think the thing about Boston is I feel like for years their play on the ice is better than the team they have on paper. So I think on paper, I think the Leafs match up better against Boston. But, like, in actuality, Boston just seems like the click, and everyone just wants it, it seems. And then I think goaltending, they have the consistency. What scares me about Florida, though, is that we faced them last year. And the Leafs don't have a good habit of repeating against former playoff opponents and bringing it. It just seems like I don't
we
know.
We did against Tampa last year.
That's okay. You're right. I stand corrected. But I didn't say I don't think they it gets in their head or something. But I didn't love how the Leafs matched up against Florida last year. It just seemed like nothing was clicking for. Did we lose in five?
Yeah.
It was brutal.
To be fair, like those first two games were close. The game five we lost was in overtime. Like really the worst game at all was game three. But the season as a whole, or the series as a whole, was closer than losing in five would probably indicate. Go ahead.
I'd still take Boston if between the two. Plus, you know, we still haven't exercised those 2013 demons. 11 years, still counting.
I don't like the idea of facing Florida just because they're the number one ranked defensive team this year. And things just get even more defensive in the playoffs where it's like one mistake's going to kill you. And if we're going to face, we're going to face a team that just makes zero mistakes, like, I don't know.
We scored five goals on them the other night.
Very against the curb.
To be fair, Florida's like 2-7-1 in their last 10. If they're limping into the playoffs, maybe it's an opportunity.
It just feels like we've seen too many years in a row where goal scoring is our issue, which is ridiculous with the personnel we have on our team, but it always seems to be the issue. And I think I have more faith that we're going to be able to score against Boston than Florida. So I think both of them will be difficult. You asked me at the beginning of this pod if I believe. I think I do. I think I'm there. Every time, it's been a really hot like last month for us, and I'm starting to get excited. I think we could beat Florida, and I think we could beat Boston. Which is good because to make it to round three, we're probably going to have to beat both of them. Like it's a really high likelihood. And if not them, it's going to be Tampa because they beat the other one and at the wild card team. So I just think we have the tools that we could do it. I think that this year more than others, we're either going to be like really great or really horrible. Like it just seems a little more Jekyll and Hyde Leafs this year than most. So But here's the thing. I was thinking about this the other day. There's always teams in the playoffs that suck, and then they get hot right at the perfect time. Usually it's the goaltender in particular that gets hot right at the perfect time, and they take their team on this massive run. It's uncanny how often the team that we're playing is that team. Like, you think of Florida last year, or Montreal in that Canada division. Columbus. Like, it. That Columbus one was crazy, how far they took Tampa. Remember that, like, 72-save performance that Corpusello made? That might have been Merlikens, I don't know. But, like, you think, like, there's always that team that just gets hot right at the perfect moment. And you know what? Like, Bertuzzi, he's hot at the perfect moment. Domi, he's better than he's been all season long. Samsonov is looking real good. Even guys like Ryan Reeves is looking great out there. Matthews has scored, like, two goals always a game. Like, it even, like, our captain, he's looking great out there in these games. Like, it just seems that now, which is maybe 10 games too early, but we're clicking when it matters most, and you just hope that this is the groove we're able to just ride into the playoffs. Like, I don't know if the high of we catch Florida and pass them is a good thing, or if that will be like, oh, we did it, and then we take our foot off the gas. Like, I just want to just trample them and then just keep trampling them, you know?
It would be nice. And I mean, I feel like we're very opportunistic with when we do our podcast. Like, oh, we're on a losing streak. I don't feel like podcasting. Oh, we beat Florida. Now let's pod.
Tim, I don't want to come on here and be miserable with you, okay? I'm not podcasting after they lose two straight games to Boston. I'm podcasting when they trample Florida 5-1, almost.
Ryan, all of our highest listened two episodes are the ones where we're literally crying on air.
Well, I don't think that'll happen this year. Here's what's going to happen, Tim. We're going to do our playoff pods after every one. There's only going to be four in the first round because we're going to sweep. Four in round two, four. This is all
it's
wins.
It's going to be game seven. I've learned the past 8 years of playoffs, game seven.
It is funny because this last year we had two different playoff rounds and neither of them went to game seven, but We're very confident. We're going to face Boston, and it's going to end confident. In game seven. It's going to be 4-1 somewhere along the line. We're very superstitious like this. So, all right. Well, the next time we talk here, it's going to be ramping up for playoffs. We're probably going to wait until we know who our playoff opponent's going to be, and we'll do an in-depth breakdown of why the Leafs are going to destroy them or why we're going to be beardless because we literally yanked the hairs out of our face in frustration. Those are the only two options here.
The only two options. The Leafs regular season ends. One thing you didn't mention about Tampa, Ryan, we play Tampa twice more before the end of the season. Granted, they're still 6 points back, but big game tomorrow.
I think last year we played Tampa in the first round, of course. I think we played our final game of the season against Tampa last year as well, right? And I seem to remember that just kind of being like a nothing game. Like
it was a nothing.
Yeah. So we play our second last game of the season against Florida, which could be our first round matchup. And it'll kind of be interesting to see how that goes. I remember we lost that game against Tampa, the last game of the season. So we'll see what happens with Florida. Maybe we'll beat them this time. I don't know.
We'll see. Well, that's April the 17th is our last game. So I think the playoffs might start on the Saturday, which would be the 20th or maybe the Sunday, the 21st. The schedule makers are, who knows what they're going to be up to. But
I heard the Leafs are planning on not planning because they don't know yet. But if it's going to be Florida, they're just going to stay in Florida because they're there to play the Panthers and the Lightning for the last two games. They're not home games. So they're just going to stay in Florida and wait for the playoffs to start.
Just wait for the playoffs to start. Well, who knows, Ryan? Maybe we'll have home ice advantage by then.
Tim, that's right. I didn't even think of that. Maybe we're going to make them follow us home. I like that, Tim.
On the same flight.
I like the optimism. Yeah, that's right.
Ryan, two goaltenders in history have more than 100 playoff wins. Who do you think they are?
Definitely Patrick Waugh would be one of them.
Yep, he's number one.
I want to say like Martin Brodeur, but it's probably not. Is it like an era before Patrick Waugh? Are we talking about like Ron Hextall or something? Or like what are you talking about?
Same era as Patrick Waugh.
It's not Martin Brodeur?
It is Martin Brodeur.
Oh, it is Martin Brodeur. Yeah. It was the obvious two answers.
Yeah. All right. Most one guy getting close though. Marc-Andre Fleury, 92.
That's pretty impressive. It's crazy was he play for Minnesota? He probably are they gonna make the playoffs?
No, I don't think so.
I think they're on the outside looking in. Poor guy.
Poor guy.
He's definitely, like, would you say he's in that upper echelon, Fleury, like, of best goaltenders in history?
Yeah, well, I think so. What holds him back is he hasn't been as dominant. Like, he's been consistently...
I don't think I've ever looked and said, like, who's the best goaltender in the league? It's Marc-Andre Fleury. I don't think I've ever thought that.
No, but like if there's an area between above average and dominant, that's where Marc-Andre Fleury's been lived for longer than anyone else. So.
I saw TSN had a video basically declaring Sidney Crosby on the Mount Rushmore of players that it's always been Gretzky, Lemieux, Howe, and Orr were like in whatever order people wanted, but those were the four and they separated themselves from everyone else who's ever played. But now Crosby just became like, I think it was the 19th year or the 17th year is one of those where he's had averaged a point a game and only Wayne Gretzky has ever done that. And like that accomplishment has propelled him to now it's no longer the Mount Rushmore of four, it's five. And Crosby joins that list. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, what's funny is as far as being like, he's at 82. What's funny, I thought they were saying like, oh, he has 74 points in 74 games. Like, yeah, but the season's not over. What if he just gets no points and you made a big, anyway,
yeah.
82 points. So he's guaranteed going to be at a point per game player. I think he's there. He has all the hardware. He has the cups. He has the reputation, the universal acclaim, the gold medals, like the I think he's up there. I mean, it's always hard to like to pull recency bias out of it. Like these guys' names have stood the test of time for I don't know 50 years or more. But like Sidney Crosby has truly like defined this era. Like the guy's mid-30s now, and you talk to NHL players and who the best in the league is, and guy still gets votes, still like consistently one of the hardest to play against, and you look at how hard he competes. Even, I mean, it is unfortunate that
Pittsburgh sucks.
Pittsburgh's gang of old geezers weren't able to get it done.
You done them dirty, Dubas. You done them dirty. No, I mean, I agree. Like, the hardware's all there. I enjoy, like, I wasn't alive when Bobby Orr was playing, and like, I don't remember Gretzky playing really. Like, I think I, if anything, just watched him at the tail end of his career, maybe. No, when was Gretzky retire?
99.
Right. So like, I would have been 5 years old when Gretzky retired. But like, I remember I was in elementary school and Crosby came into the league, and like, my like growing up of hockey and like loving the sport has been rooted in like the Ovechkin Crosby rivalry. Like, that was so much a big of like hockey and me coming into it. So it's fun to know that like a guy who I grew up like watching and knowing this guy's the best player in the league every single year, that he's in that same conversation with the greatest players who have ever played this game. It wasn't just the greatest player I got to watch. He's actually one of the greatest players to ever play. And we'll see if guys like Matthews or McDavid are also one day in that discussion. They might be. McDavid especially is making quite the case for it with the points he's racking up. But
he's making waves. But if they don't win a Stanley Cup, though, they can't knock
it. No, you're right. You're very right.
I know, like, there's some people go back and forth, say, oh, can you win the Hart Trophy if your team doesn't make the playoffs or whatever? But I'd say, like, if your team doesn't win the championship, even though it's a team sport, it doesn't matter. You can't make it up there.
Yep.
So, but maybe this is the year. Edmonton's looking real good.
No, we can beat them in the finals. That's as far as they're getting.
That's as far as they're getting.
That's right. All right, we better put a cap on this, or Steven's going to come on here and hit the Leafs talk only button. So I think we got to get out of here, Tim.
Leafs talk only. All right. Well, we'll see where we are in 2 weeks. Ryan, we are on the cusp of potentially greatness, also potentially heartbreak. But
no, greatness. This is the year, Tim.
We've waited all year for this.
Yep.
Exciting times. All right. See you guys in a week and a half.